for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello, I'm not Andy Shilton, I'm Steph Barnett.
And I am Ezra Peregrine, and I've lost my script, so I'm going to have to ad-lib.
It's our first Leap show, can you believe that? Today on the show, Avon and Somerset Police, good, bad, indifferent. We attended their first stakeholder event to pass on your comments and feedback and find out their plans. We've spoken to Chief Superintendent Vix Hayward-Meeland since the event, plus we'll be talking about our experience too.
All that and more today on Shoutout.
Oh, you grabbed it then.
Yes, I did.
That was a long inward script
yes.
that Andy had written.
I'm very sorry about that. One moment it was on my phone and then it had disappeared, which I was absolutely worried about anyway. So, you know,
yeah.
What can I say?
Yeah.
I'll be more prepared next time.
You
if
reckon.
There is a next time.
Yeah, unfortunately, Andy's not feeling very well.
Oh.
So he's probably snuggled down in bed and curled up to a bit of Lemsip.
Yes.
I was wondering what you were going to say there,
yes.
curled up to a bit of, you know, hot totty.
Well, is a Lemsip a hot totty?
Absolutely, yes.
It's a hot totty.
Especially if you top it up with whiskey or
yeah.
something, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
The old remedy. Yes,
a leap date. This is, last week I mentioned that, okay, folks, free and gratis, you're going to get an extra day this year. Care of Shout Out, of course.
So 5 weeks in February this year.
Yeah. Well, it's our first Leap show.
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah. All started by Julius Caesar.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the Julian calendar, and then that was reformed.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy how they knew that, you know, the timings weren't quite correct for us spinning around the sun?
There is a very interesting book called The Calendar, and it sort of like talks about the 5,000 years that it took to sort of like come up with an accurate calendar, because all of the ancient ones, they all drifted. So the Julian calendar, although it was accurate when Julius Caesar introduced it, by the Middle Ages it was 11 days out.
Wow.
And then Pope Gregory gave us the Gregorian calendar, which is the modern calendar we use in the West now.
Okay.
Yeah. But of course, the Orthodox Church in Russia still uses the Julian calendar, you know, which is why their Christmas is not till January the 6th.
Yeah. Christianity and Islam mostly took their dates from paganism, didn't they, instead of messing people around.
Yeah, they were very pragmatic about it. Yeah, yeah.
Instead of messing people around,
yeah.
That's an interesting way to look at it. They didn't take
that's
anything.
That's not inconvenience.
Take anything from the pagans. We didn't want to mess anybody around.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. So it's fascinating, yeah, comparative religion. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Subject is interesting.
Well, we had a good chat. The meeting with the police went really well. We've got an interview coming up now with Vix Hayward-Meeland.
Ooh.
And Andy and I attended. It was a good meeting. But I'll play the chat that Andy had with Vix first, and then we can chat about it.
Sure.
Okie dokie.
You may remember a few weeks ago we covered Peter Tatchell's Apologise Now campaign, and we ended up talking to Chief Inspector Vix Hayward-Meeland from Avon and Somerset Police with their response to that very question. You can still hear that again. It's still available on podcast on our website. But Vix is with us now because last week we actually had the consultancy meeting that you may remember she talked about on the show. So first of all, very warm welcome to you, Vix. Welcome back to Shout Out.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me back.
Now, obviously, we covered it lots on the previous show when we came on and we read out the apology and you put together a load of actions, which I don't know if you listened to Peter Tatchell's response we had on that same show. But he actually came back and said what he found most impressive about Avon and Somerset Police was you were the first one to have actually put together a plan of what you were going to do to start correcting things, whereas a lot of the others have done an apology but they're working on their plan. So you were already ahead of the game. You may have been seventh to apologize as a constabulary, but the first one to have an actual plan. And of course, the first step of that was the community liaison type meeting that I don't know if you had an official name for it. It was kind of like a meetup between yourselves and the community. I don't know if you want to give a bit more of a background behind that before we carry on.
So formally, we called it a stakeholder event, but truthfully, I think, it ended up being enjoying each other's kind of time together for a couple of hours and discussing some of the key issues that are facing the community and their receipt of policing services, really. So, it was a really good event and lots coming out of it. And like I said previously, the start of a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, to give listeners a bit of an idea behind it, we ended up with like about four round tables and Vix and another member of your team. I think she was more of an HR type person, was she not? Stood up and introduced yourselves.
Yeah, so it was our chief officer for people and organisational teeth in Vic development, Louise Hutchison. So she sits with Sarah Crewe, our chief constable, and the other chief officers, basically leading the force at an executive level. So she was up there. I was up there with her rather than her being up there with me.
So, but they introduced themselves. Then there were several roundtables with different questions being asked. It was open to you if you're listening at home, and there will be another one in 6 months, which we'll cover more towards the end. But a good fair few of us turned out. I don't know if you know the exact number that turned out, do you? But there was representation from Shout Out and from Bristol Pride and the LGBT Forum, to name but a few of the organisations that were there, as well as a fair few individuals. I guess first question, do you want to give our audience kind of a summary of what it was you were trying to get out of us?
Yes, absolutely. So the main thing that we wanted to do, and I do make no apologies for repeating myself, even though it drives my wife insane, is that it was to start a conversation. What I didn't want, what I know we didn't want people coming to the event and feeling like, well, this is just a flash in the pan. We're doing it to tick a box. We're doing it just to say we've done it. And then that's the end of that. We always knew that it was going to be the start of some challenging conversations, but also some positive ones to address those actions that we referred to in the letter. So it was a really good start. And you've mentioned the roundtables already, Andy, and I know we're going to hopefully a bit more detail about what we discussed in those roundtables. Just to get the ball rolling, because we recognise we're coming from a position where engagement with the LGBT community has not been where we wanted it to be, likewise with trust and confidence. So it was just opening up those lines of communication in the very first instance and starting to have those chats, really.
Now, I remember some bits. I didn't make it round every table. Do you know what was asked on each table? Do you still have that information to hand?
I do. So we had four round tables, and the overall themes that were included on them was first table was what do you want to see more of from your local police? And that had a really good discussion around it, and I can go into the detail of that in a little bit. The second was confidence in reporting crimes, particularly hate crime, and what would give the people that were around that table having that discussion the confidence to report crime. And then the third one was around the Stonewall Workplace Equality Index and how people felt about that and being part of it and our representations around it. So, and then finally, we were talking about having the police response to mental health and LGBT intersectionality. So some really meaty topics that people really got engaged in and gave us their thoughts that were specific to our community, really.
Do you know, out of the responses you got, were there any bits that really stood out? Because obviously you're a member of the community yourself, so it's kind of, for you, it must be a bit of a two-hat thing. But were there any surprises that came out of it, things that you weren't expecting, or anything in particular that you felt that the audience you had there really focused on that really stood out as things to work on?
So there were two main takeaways that I personally had. So I led the table that talked about reporting of crime and reporting of hate crime. And the first thing that came up was around getting the basics right. Now, it was no surprise to me that we need to get basics right. But what did, I think, take me aback slightly is the experience that some of the people had around the table and were representing others. There was some organizations there who put out to their members or to the people that they support on a WhatsApp group, and they were passing on in questions on their behalf because they couldn't attend the actual event themselves. And it was about the fact that they were almost, they'd had experiences where they were gaslighted by police to say, well, that isn't a hate crime, or if you've come out dressed like that, you know, what else did you expect, and things that truly, you know, horrified me. And, you know, things around misgendering and dead naming and making sure that people get pronouns right. And even, you know, simple language that might sound simple to people about, you know, using phrases such as ladies and gentlemen, you know. So the real basics, you know, you think that when it comes to reporting crime, it's like, okay, how do we report it? Is it online? Is it on the phone? Is it this? Is it that? But actually, taking it back one step further, and the basics that are involved in even just that human interaction between policing, you know, services, be that police officers, call handlers, whoever, and a member of the public who's reporting a hate crime. So that was the first thing for me. And then the second thing that I really took away was around the experience and the knowledge that we've got out there with other organisations who can help us and support us. So, you know, I think sometimes in the police we can get stuck into being really pragmatic and wanting to fix things straight away, or being, you know, very practical people. And actually looking and seeing the experience and the knowledge that other organisations and people can bring to helping make things better. It was a really positive eye-opening experience for me. So it wasn't all about times when we've got it wrong. Goodness me, there's enough of those. But it was a really positive thing to take away, that actually we've got a lot of people we can draw on when we look to make this better.
Cool. So lots of points came away. You mentioned Stonewall there as well. I was actually on one of the tables where that was talked about, and the question was put back to us whether we felt it was value or not. And there was an overwhelming feeling that it was a valuable thing to do. It's something that the government's put a lot of pressure on various governmental organisations to pull away from, but there was a big sense on our table that, you know, actually it does a really good thing, and it really proves that you're not just checking a checkbox, because it's quite a detailed thing. You have to do a lot to do the Stonewall stuff. So that was quite interesting from that table. What about the what can you do more of? I think one of the key points I remember from that one was around being more visible for the community.
Yeah, so some of the key points that came up on that table was around both visibility in terms of, I know it sounds quite simple, but seeing police officers out on the beat, out, you know, driving past, engaging with people at events and the like, and that isn't just unique to the LGBT community. We do hear that from other communities as well, and we understand that, you know, being able to see police officers, police staff, and have conversations and see the humans behind it helps break down barriers and encourage, you know, reporting and confidence in the police.
That can't be an easy one though, because surely that also depends on how many police you actually have in the first place. You can't be everywhere all at once.
You can't, and I think it's understanding actually the situations in which you're going to get, I would say, most bang for your buck, really, in terms of actually, if we've got an event where this is, you know, or coming on Shout Out, where I know the reach of Shout Out, there's only one of me, but I'm hoping to reach as many of your listeners as possible. So whilst they might not physically see me, I'm hoping that, you know, that it doesn't just have to be a physical seeing of somebody, because I know how important radio is in terms of engaging with people and getting ideas out there and conversations had. So I think it's about thinking about it differently in 2024 and making the most of what we have available to us. And again, you know, the organisations and the people who can help us do that, like yourself and Steffi do on Shout Out.
Now, I know that obviously that it gave you a lot of feedback. It's going to be quite a lot to pro. I mean, we're literally scratching the surface of it, but we could fill the entire show if we went through the whole thing. But a couple of points. Firstly, you asked at the end what people's thoughts were from that point on. And I know there was an overwhelming feeling that they wanted you, and when I say you, I mean plural, obviously, but to commit to what happens next. So I believe there's already a preliminary date set in roughly about 6 months' time for another one of those meetings, which we'll advertise closer to the time. But the intention is to feed back to all of those that were there, so we can also share with our listeners the outcomes and then what actions you're intending to take. Do we have a time frame on that yet? I don't think it was decided on the night.
No, it wasn't. So the notes that were made from the event, everybody who was on the different tables, somebody had the misfortune of having to read my handwriting because I was one of the note takers on my table. So they've all
been typed out. I purposely didn't write so that you didn't have that problem.
So I scribbled away on the flip charts that were on the tables, as did others, and they've all been typed up today and they arrived in my inbox this morning. So, you know, the fact that that's been done very quickly hopefully demonstrates the impetus that is behind it. We've got a debrief meeting from the internal people who attended coming at the end of this week, and so from there we will then look at how we share those notes and that debrief with the wider community, with yourselves. So it is moving swiftly. It really is, and there's definitely the emphasis of having Lou as the chief officer behind it, which really does help. And the reason, you know, people will say, well, 6 months, goodness me, that's so far away. And it was a conscious decision on the night that actually we want to be in a position in 6 months' time where we come back and we've got something to update on. Whereas, you know, 3 months might not have given us that. And people might come back and say, well, we're still discussing the same things we discussed before. What have you actually done? So that's why we put a little bit of a longer time limit on it. But hopefully, because it will be more of a productive conversation and we can demonstrate some growth and movement in 6 months' time.
Sure. And I know our listeners, there'll be some there that listening that weren't aware of it, because, you know, as much as we wish everyone listened every single week, they all do, honest. Yeah. I'm sure some of them will have missed it. Is it too late if we get feedback from them to pass it to you? Or is that something you still like our audience to do?
I am always, and we are always, open for feedback. You know, one of our values is learning, and we live that through and through. And so just because somebody wasn't able to make the event or contribute to the event, doesn't mean that even if, you know, in 3 months' time you get a listener who wants to provide feedback, you've now got me as a hopefully a regular contact and somebody who they're going to be hearing from, you know, more on shout out. Please do feed it back, because we continue to want to listen to people and hear from people. So yeah, most definitely no time limit.
Well, if you are listening and you have a view on anything to be talked about, studio@shoutoutradio.lgbt is the email address you want. That comes through to us, and we can obviously pass on that, and we can anonymize it if you don't want it to include your name. Just make sure you make that clear in your email. And Vix, I think what might be worth us doing for the next one, if the format's going to be a similar kind of thing where the questions are known beforehand, perhaps if we get them before, we can actually put a form up on our website and get our listeners to actually pass their views as well. I know Pride is something similar for this one, just more generic, but perhaps we'll come back to that one in 6 months or closer to the time, I should say, not leave it till the day.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, that's a lot of this, truthfully, you know, I we're rolling out the carpet as we're walking on it. So there were parts from this event that there were individuals who and organizations who were missed off the invite list, because I'm personally am still trying to understand who the people to engage with in our communities are. And, you know, I it was an honest mistake. And so what I'm saying is that we are looking to grow, build, make it better as we go. So any support we can have in achieving that will be taken with open arms.
Well, fingers crossed. I know one of the big questions that got asked there was, we've done this before. We did this a decade ago. It got there. It fizzled out again. Play devil's advocate, what would you say to anyone that say the same thing when they're listening to this?
So I think anything that, what I would say to that is, I'm putting my name on this as a member of the community. So not only in my role as a police officer and the, you know, the chair, the co-chair of the LGBT network, I'm doing this because I also could have to report a hate crime for myself or my wife. So the proof will be in the pudding and all the other metaphors that I've dialed out today. But truthfully, I wouldn't put my name to it if I didn't think that we weren't going to follow through on it, because it's just too important. And I'm a member of the community and I don't want to let them down.
Cool. Well, as you know, we're hoping this is the start of something really great, and we're hopefully going to be there along the journey with you. I'm sure we will have you on air before 6 months. Don't worry if you're listening, we will make sure that we bring you up to date when more comes out as the results from the meeting we had last week. But for now, though, big thanks to you, Vix, for joining us. It's always lovely to catch up with you. And till next time, everyone, Chief Inspector Vix Hayward-Mulin.
Thank you.
Shout out
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Crush Jennifer Page.
Every time we touch.
That was like they were in the room, wasn't it?
That was really in was. Queer as Folk.
Oh,
but not that version.
Gosh, I haven't seen that for a long time.
The British or the American?
The British one. Yes. It was a much more pumped and gay version.
A much more pumped up gay version?
Yes.
Right.
Well, we all like
a bit pumped up gay. Said in unison, Terry Scott.
Yes, indeed.
One mind.
Right, we got the news.
Oh. You have indeed.
Are you both ready?
Yeah.
As ready as we'll ever be.
This is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
Several thousand people, according to some estimates, gathered in the gay neighbourhood of Oklahoma City on Saturday the 24th of February to mourn the death of Nex Benedict, a non-binary teenager murdered by violent heterosexual students at the high school. LGBTQIA Plus magazine The Advocate reports that LGBTQ Plus supporters and activists called for action. The event darkened not only by the death of the El Paso teen, but also by recent inflammatory comments from a state government official calling the state's LGBTQ Plus citizens filth. Nicole Poindexter, an associate regional campaign director of the state's human rights campaign, recounted to the crowd how she had lobbied against recent anti-trans and anti-LGBTQ plus bills at the state legislature, which had passed laws that restrict LGBT plus language in schools and bar trans students from using bathrooms that align with their gender identity. "We told them this would happen," Poindexter said. "We told them that if they continued this rhetoric of hate, this rhetoric of division, that it would result in body bags. And I am devastated to tell you we were right."
The Prime Minister, who lasted just 43 days in the job, famously noted as shorter than the time it takes for a lettuce to go off, has been sharply criticised by Labour and Liberal Democrat MPs for making an appearance at a far-right-wing conference in the US, where she spread bizarre conspiracy theories, disgraced ex-PM Liz Truss, who was ousted by her own Conservative colleagues and replaced by Rishi Sunak, made a series of strange allegations. Pink News says that she claimed that transgender activists were in control of the civil service. The Guardian notes that she also said that the deep state and the left were to blame for her fall from power. Jonathan Ashworth, the shadow paymaster general, said Sunak should address Truss's comments and take action. After crashing the economy and sending mortgages rocketing, Liz Truss is now spreading conspiracy theories with Steve Bannon and spearheading a wacky fringe group to take over the Tory party again. The Liberal Democrats called for Truss to give back the £115,000 allowance for post-ministerial life she was given after leaving office.
Now, the internet can be a dreadful Wild West-style place of hatred and ignorance. However, a new study quoted by Live Science web portal demonstrates that building safe community spaces for LGBTQIA+ and African American youth via social media and texting can help improve health outcomes in the battle against HIV. A few simple strategies, including telehealth coaching appointments and automated text messages, can dramatically boost the uptake of pre-exposure prophylaxis, known as PrEP, in young people, so a new study finds. Nicoletta Lanais, summarising the study for Live Science, noted that in the future even AI chatbots could help minority youth in dealing with health challenges and bolstering their self-esteem and mental health. The research was conducted by a team led by Dallas Swendman for the UCLA Centre for HIV Identification, Prevention and Treatment Services.
LGBT plus lobbying LGBT plus lobbying organisations and charity Stonewall is marking 35 years of existence in 2024. To celebrate, they are inviting people to commit to walking 10,000 steps a day during March and raising funds for the charity in the process. A spokesperson for Stonewall said, "We've achieved so much, but in every community in the UK, LGBTQ plus people still face harm in their homes, schools and workplaces, with the institutions meant to protect us too often remaining silent or unable to fully support. Don't be silent this March. Make every step count and take on our Steps for Stonewall challenge."
A not-for-profit company in Australia is showing that toiletries can be ethical, sustainable and support young people's mental health, especially LGBTQIA plus young people. The brand Unlabeled will be familiar to readers of the Aussie gay men's magazine DNA for its sexy advertisements. But there's a serious message behind the promotional material. The company says Unlabeled is a not-for-profit social enterprise registered with the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profit Commission. While our mission may be simple, our task is enormous as we aim to help reduce the incidence of youth suicide. To help us achieve this, we have created a range of ethical and sustainable hand and body wash products which are sold nationally through Chemist Warehouse and on our website. 100% of our profits from Unlabeled will go towards resourcing the following four organisations whose work is so vital in helping prevent youth suicide. They are Headspace, QLife, Kids Helpline and the Black Dog Institute. QLife is a network which provides Australia-wide anonymous LGBTQIA plus peer support and referral for people wanting to talk about a range of issues around sexuality, identity, gender, bodies, feelings or relationships.
On Saturday, March 2nd, a queer power party is taking place in Birmingham to share the joy of our rainbow community and build community resilience. Expect performance, live vocals, drag, live DJs, unforgettable music and plenty of dancing. It's time to turn up the BPM and come together on the dance floor as we mobilise our bodies and move towards a brighter, queerer future. This is an inclusive sober dance party created specifically to empower people to dance, take up space, feel confident and celebrate themselves. Mobilise is a party for anyone who has felt like they don't belong in existing LGBTQ plus nightlife spaces. We are pro-fat, pro-trans, pro-disabled, pro-women, anti-racist, alcohol-free, pro-fabulous clubbing environment. Mobilise is presented by Fat Projects and a full access statement and venue information can be found on the Fat Projects website, www.fatprojects.org/mobilise.
And finally, we say adieu, agwil, dewi hapus this weekend, as we see Friday the 1st of March as St David's Day in Wales. For the benefit of our listeners outside the UK, Wales is a constituent part of the United Kingdom, and although it was conquered by England in 1283 CE, Wales retains its own language, an ancient Celtic tongue, and its own traditions and customs. Devolved government was introduced by the reforming Blair administration in 1999, although nationalists advocate for more self-rule. There are around 500,000 Welsh speakers and there are television and radio networks in the language. For LGBTQIA plus people, the country has long been a place to call home. Many lesbian feminists settled in communes in the countryside during the 70s, back to the land movement. And today, larger towns and cities like Cardiff, Swansea and Wrexham have sizeable LGBT plus commercial scenes. Cardiff Pride in particular attracts thousands of people each summer. So we wish our Welsh listeners all the very best this celebratory weekend.
And that's it for the news this week. So much more is happening in the LGBTQIA plus universe, though, so be sure to keep in tune to Community Radio Services, LGBTQIA plus podcasts and web feeds through the week to stay up to date. And we shall be here next time for
Shout Out News. This has been Terry Starr.
And Ezra Peregrine.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Sorry.
Wow.
I know. That was purposely off key. Such fun.
I have heard your voice, you know.
Yeah, I've heard yours.
Yes, I can't sing.
Well, I mean, okay.
Just saying.
I can think. Was, I can think.
Okay. Calm down. Calm down.
That good was track. A fun track, actually.
Well, Shalimar.
Me and Terry.
I was thinking who it was. I remember Shalimar. Yeah.
Yeah, night to remember.
Is it Shalimar or Shalimar?
In the West Country, it's Shalimar.
Right. I'm just going to close my mic down and let you two get on with it.
No, that's fine.
You two poshos.
Sorry.
Right, now Andy and Vix Hayward Meelan were chatting earlier about the event and what happened there and how it was run.
Yeah.
It was a good event. I was very disappointed that there were no trans organisations asked.
Right.
So, yeah, so they've apologised profusely for that and we'll rectify that in the next meeting.
Which does seem a bit of an oversight.
It does, yeah. Especially considering the what's going on around the planet and, well, especially this country currently with trans women and the hit that trans women are getting. Yeah, so that was disappointing. The other thing that made me slightly uncomfortable was when it got round to the Pride March. And the police obviously want to march in Pride with the rainbow car and the police officers in uniform. Like they've done in the past. But Bristol Pride are not allowing that. They've said because they've had a lot of concern from members and people who are going to be marching. So the police will be there, but they have to be in civvies. And the only police in uniform are the ones that are actually guarding, protecting the stewarding. Marches.
Yeah.
Marches. So that made me feel very uncomfortable because it's part of our remit to be fully inclusive and I can understand why, mind. I can understand there's lots of complaints and there's lots of worries about what's going on with the police right across the country and especially in London. But I just love inclusivity and that means that I feel that the police who march in uniform, proud, wearing rainbow badges and paint on their faces, it always makes them seem more human and more part of the community, whereas this is doing dead the opposite. So what's your thoughts on that?
Consequences.
No, yes, exactly.
That's the first thing. And I think if you look at over the last many months, all the different apologies that have been coming out from all the different police services throughout the UK. I think today, the North Yorkshire Police, I can't remember what you call it, but they gave an apology, submitted an apology.
It was, Wiltshire did it the other day.
This is Peter Tatchell's campaign, isn't it?
Yes, yes. But an apology in the to news, Peter Tatchell in the, for historic wrongdoings.
Yes,
but in the news today, North Yorkshire Police apologised to LGBTQ+.
Community. Excellent.
Wow. Yeah, so the reason I bring that up is because, you know, obviously this is happening now almost weekly, at least monthly, that different police forces throughout the UK are coming forward and making public apologies and attempting in their own way to make amends. Now, when people make apologies and try to make amends, it's because often they've done something wrong. So I think that's what the focus is for me when we look at why they are not currently being welcome to march with the people within the Bristol Pride community, because if there was nothing to apologise for and if there was no wrongdoing, there would be no reason to not have them be included. I think one of the biggest problems is that there has been a lot of issues within the force of homophobia, transphobia and discriminating against people because they aren't heterosexual. And that is, you know, it's a very sad thing. It's been going on for an extremely long amount of time. I think that recently, because people won't back down and because people are shouting a bit louder than ever, people are having to acknowledge that they need to speak.
It's also those comments that some police officers will give to people who are dressed maybe in fetish gear or maybe what is seen as a little bit sexy. What do you expect being dressed like that? I mean, what a terrible thing to say. People should be able to dress how they like without fear of threats from other people in society.
Just to put it into historical context, I think that this discussion about who can take part in Pride and who can march in Pride has been going on a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, in the early years of the post-Stonewall gay liberation movement, which emerged from the New Left and the counterculture of the 60s and replaced the previous quite conservative gay organisations that existed in the so-called homophile movement or homophile movement, which existed before, there was a strong feeling of anti-militarism, and the groups campaigned very much for peace and disarmament and so on. The Greenham Common Women, lots of lesbian women at Greenham, for example, the peace camps there during the 1980s. And there was, for many years, a strong feeling that people from the armed forces should not be included in Pride, even though there were many LGBT plus people in the armed forces. So the early gay liberation movement had that issue. The Conservative Party has only been allowed to have stalls, you know, the gay Conservatives have only been able to have stalls in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Before the late 90s, really, most Prides would say, no way, yeah, you're not having a Tory party stall at Pride.
Yeah. Yeah.
And perhaps with the Conservative Party's current rightward drift, many Prides will say that again now. So,
I think so.
But it's a part of a wider issue. I've seen rows between radical activists and gay Conservatives at stalls at Prides in the past. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I something that, you know, Peter Tatchell's talked about and something that I agree with is that, you know, while we can acknowledge and have gratitude for all of these apologies that are coming forward, it's about recognising the need to draw a line under past extreme persecution of LGBT plus people by UK police, you know, because it is historical. This has gone on for such a very long time.
I would note, though, that the police were only enforcing the law. I know that's not an excuse to excuse that persecution, but the laws themselves were homophobic. So the responsibility also lay with the Crown Prosecution Service and with members of Parliament.
Of course.
Well, yes, of all parties.
They're the lawmakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that happened.
I hope that there comes a time, is what I'm trying to say, where there is that level of inclusivity again, though. Mm. And I do think wholeheartedly that these apologies are coming from a genuine place. I do not think this is disingenuous. I don't, you know, yes, you know, that this has been requested, but I do think their heart is in it. I know that there are many LGBTQI plus people within the force who truly want to support queer people, make young people feel safe, etc.
The police in that room when we had that meeting were definitely passionate.
Yes.
Really passionate at getting this right.
Yeah.
And outreaching and trying to pull themselves back from what was the brink. And
absolutely.
So I really got my fingers crossed that this happens this time, because the police that are involved in organising it, like Vix, Hayward Meelan, they are behind this.
Yeah, of course.
And they really want it to work.
Yeah, and also what's happening now is something you were talking about made me think there, Terry, that historically, you know, that you're right, it was illegal to be, you know, homosexual, and that was an arrestable offence. And I think that when that got decriminalised, the problem was is that people's mindsets didn't change overnight. Mm. So what we're seeing now, though, is officers coming into becoming police officers, sorry, we're seeing people becoming police officers who've only lived in a society where it's the opposite of it being